Alex ordered Sage's setup before his, and it was ready before she was done brushing down and caring for Shadow. When everything was finally settled for the night, he still hadn't had a chance to speak with her. Alex stood outside her tent, watching the silhouette made by a single candle inside. It was now or never. Alex took a deep breath and opened the flap to duck inside. He'd given Sage a tent large enough to stand in, an officer's tent, with a cot and a chair and table. She sat at it now, writing what looked like a letter, and when he entered, he brought a breeze that nearly extinguished her light. Sage cupped her hand around the flame to protect it, and glanced up, annoyed. Her eyes widened as she recognized him. It was suddenly like the night they'd met, when he'd brought her supper as she worked in the library of Galeric, when he'd been disguised as a common soldier. Alex hesitated before taking another step. Only then did he remember he should have asked before coming inside. "Why are you still up?" he asked, inching closer. "You must be exhausted." Sage went back to her writing.
"I have a lot to do, and very little could be done while on horseback."
He stopped on the opposite side of the table.
"We'll be setting up everything tomorrow, so Nicholas won't have time for lessons yet. You can relax and recover from the journey."
"I'm fine, sir."
He stiffened.
"You don't have to call me that when we're alone."
"My apologies. It's such a rare occurrence."
Her quill scratched across the paper. Alex said nothing, but tapped his fingers gently on the wood.
"Do you need something?"
She still wouldn't look up. Alex cleared his throat.
"I have something for you. A present."
Her quill stopped, and he heard her catch her breath. He pulled the cloth-wrapped object from his jacket.
"I was going to give it to you in Tenegal before I left, but since you came, I decided to wait for your actual birthday."
Alex laid it on the table between them, and she hesitated before reaching out to pull the cloth away, revealing a sheathed dagger.
"I had it made for you," he whispered, "months ago."
The dagger's black and gold hilt was almost identical to the one she carried, the one Alex's mother had gifted him when he left home for page training. He'd given it to her last spring for protection, but also because any of his men would have recognized it with its inlaid letters A.Q. Sage tilted the handle to see the initials in the candlelight. S.F.
"There's no Q," she said.
Alex nodded.
"I had them leave room for it, if you want to add it later, or..."
"In case I change my mind?"
She raised her eyes. He felt the blood drain from his face. There was a flash of guilt in her gray eyes, and she looked down.
"I guess this means you want yours back."
She reached for the knife at her belt.
"No,"
he said quickly. She unhooked it anyway, and held it next to the new one.
"I suppose it's too small for you anymore," she said.
"Even if it wasn't, I gave that to you to keep. I want you to have it."
Sage pursed her lips.
"Will you teach me to fight with two knives, then?"
Alex flushed.
"Given the way our last lesson ended, that's not a good idea right now."
It had been the night he finally admitted to himself how much she meant to him. His internal defenses suddenly breached. Alex had been unprepared to resist the desires that swept over him, and within minutes, he'd been ready to throw everything away for what he wanted. Then she'd called him Ash and brought him to his senses.
"No," she said. "You wouldn't want to say anything you'd regret later."
"I don't regret anything about that night."
Sage blinked at the daggers, silently tracing the initials on both with her thumbs.
"Well," Alex said finally, "happy birthday."
He turned to go. She dropped the knives and jumped to her feet.
"Wait."
Alex eyed Sage warily as she came around the table to stand in front of him. She held out her hands, palms down, in the royal gesture of gratitude she must have picked up from living at the palace. Without thinking, he reached back.
"Thank you,"
she said softly, squeezing his fingers. He held on longer than he should have, then pulled her a half step closer. Sweet spirit, she smelled good. He'd forgotten how good until yesterday morning, when he'd stepped up to help her, and every rational thought had vanished at her touch. Just like now. The color of her hair had already lightened a few shades from 2 weeks outdoors. Her skin, too, was sun-kissed and more freckled than ever. Alex released her fingers and slowly raised a hand to brush hair from her eyes. Once he'd gotten over the shock of that first day, he kind of liked the way it looked.
"Is there anything else you wanted?"
Alex whispered. "Ask me to kiss you," he begged silently. Her mouth twisted up a little on one side. "For my birthday, or in general?"
"Either."
His fingers closed on a few strands of her hair. "Ask me to kiss you." Sage shook her head. "I can't have what I want."
"Maybe you can tonight."
He leaned forward to close the gap between them. "Ask me to kiss you." "Cass told me you didn't want anyone here to know about us." Her voice was suddenly bitter. Alex froze, his mouth only inches from hers.
"That's for your reputation more than mine," he said. "I'm not ashamed of you."
The heat of her hand left his. "You can't have it both ways, Alex." It wasn't fair of him to do this to her. He couldn't make the rules and disregard them whenever he felt like it. Alex took a step back.
"You're right," he said. "I'm sorry."
He turned away and pushed out of the tent, but not before hearing her whisper, "Me too." Chapter 25. Reveille woke her from a restless sleep. Everyone was assembling on the flat and clear area for morning drills. Sage rolled from her cot and stretched. Back in Tenegal, she went to the tilting yards nearly every day, and she rather missed it. Why not join in here? After throwing on an over tunic and yanking on her boots, Sage jogged to the exercise area and took a place in the back. The morning calisthenics were brutal on the muscles, sore from riding, but only made her determined to participate from then on. When the routine ended, Lieutenant Kasich announced everyone was to line up and fill sandbags needed to build the training ground. Sage had written her first report for the Queen last night and had nothing else to do, so she saw no reason not to help. Alex and everyone else ought to see she was willing to do whatever work needed to be done. 3 hours later, Sage was more sweaty and filthy than she'd ever been in her life. Everyone began straggling to the river to clean up. Sage took a few steps downhill, but then shirts began coming off, and she hesitated. Soon all the men passing her were shedding clothes. She heard a belt buckle being worked a second before she caught sight of the first bare bottom plunging into the river. Face flaming, Sage ran back to her tent and stayed there for a full hour. How was she supposed to get clean herself? Would she have to bathe in the river fully clothed? A sloshing sound made her look up, and she peeked out of the tent to see Nicholas setting 2 wooden buckets of water just outside. She called her thanks to his back and brought them inside, then scrubbed herself thoroughly with the water from one, trying not to get the ground wet. If this was how it was going to be, she'd have to think of something to prevent mud. The second bucket she used to rinse her clothes. When she finally felt it was safe to come out, she wrung the water from her tunic and undershirt and hung them to dry on the line outside. Her underclothes she left spread on her cot. She was separated from the row of officers' tents by a larger, peaked canvas structure. Sage wasn't sure it could be called a tent, as the sides were either non-existent or rolled up. It must be for large assemblies and non-combat instruction, such as Tanner's lecture on battlefield medicine scheduled for that evening. With a start, she realized the long table inside was too heavy and bulky to have been carried on the journey. Puzzled, she went to inspect it. The top was fairly flat, but the bottom was much rougher. The sawdust and shavings on the ground, coupled with the earthy scent of wood hewn before drying, told her it had been made this morning. Lieutenant Tanner approached with a nod of greeting.
How are you settling in, Mistress Sage?
She stood straight and rapped her knuckles on the wood. When did this happen? The scars on Tanner's face pulled one eyebrow so they didn't quite rise evenly.
You didn't hear the work this morning? I called out them with carpenter and tree-felling experience, and they did this instead of bagging sand.
Impressive, Sage said, meaning it. Is this where you'll teach bone-setting tonight?
This is the place,
he answered.
And I was supposed to, but Captain Quinn wants me to scout with him tonight, which is why I came to find you. He suggested you'd be willing to talk about foraging and edible plants instead.
Alex wanted her to do something. Was he asking as an apology for last night, or just offering her a way to occupy her time? Either way, after all the odd looks she'd gotten on this journey, she was eager to show the soldiers she had something to offer. Of course, Lieutenant. I'd be happy to. Tanner smiled as crookedly as he'd quirked his eyebrows.
Thank you, ma'am.
When Tanner was gone, Sage realized she should have asked him more about where he and Alex were going. She'd work the question into a conversation later. In any case, if she was going to give a lesson tonight, it would be better with examples of plants rather than just descriptions or drawings. The sun was almost at its peak, so there was no time to lose. Sage went back to her tent and dumped her pack out onto her cot, then settled it over her shoulders. Her stomach growled as she stepped outside again, reminding her she'd not eaten in hours. So she headed to one of the supply tents first. A few minutes later, she entered the woods, an apple in one hand and a hunk of dried venison in the other. Chapter 26. No one had seen her for an hour. Alex prowled around the camp, getting more anxious with every second that passed. Finally, he barged into her tent, searching for a clue as to where she'd gone. A stack of books lay on her desk, including what looked like a journal. Several outfits and personal items sat in a pile on one end of her cot, while some very personal items were spread out to dry on the other. Alex flushed and focused on making sense of the stack of clothing. She'd emptied and taken her bag. She was going to get something. It must have been urgent. Then he remembered he'd told Tanner to ask if she'd take his place in tonight's lecture, so he could scout with Alex. Even if Sage was angry with him, it was safe to assume she'd agree. Shit. She'd left camp to collect edible and poisonous plants. His left arm ached as he clenched his fists. Damn it, Sage. He was already wearing his sword. He felt naked without it, but he'd need more than that. Things were still being unpacked and sorted, and it took several precious minutes to locate the crossbows. Alex slung one over his shoulder and walked the perimeter of the camp, looking at the ground. She was so lightweight, he almost missed her footprints heading into the woods. Her path wandered quite a bit, but went steadily north. It was a good quarter hour before he became fully accustomed to the faint signs she left behind. He was used to tracking much heavier men and beasts. Often the only trace was the fresh divot where a cluster of mushrooms or another plant had been pulled up. Once he found an apple core she'd tossed several feet from her trail. After about 2 miles, he found several strands of light brown hair draped over the branch of a low bush. How had that happened? Was she crawling? He crouched down to peer at them, puzzled. It almost looked as if they'd been laid there. A twig snapped, and Alex jumped up, swinging the crossbow around. Sage stood about 20 feet away, watching him. Relief spread through his chest. She was safe. The two ends of a broken stick were in her hands. You're dead, she said coolly. She'd set a trap for him and gotten close enough to have done serious damage before he could react. Alex dropped the bow, more impressed than he wanted to be. Sage tossed the pieces of twig aside.
You look lost, she said.
No more than you, he replied. Only then did he realize how thirsty he was, and he'd neglected to bring along a canteen. He'd dropped every responsibility to himself and the Norsari to find her.
She walked past him, headed north again. I'm heading for the lake.
Alex took a few running steps to catch up. How do you know there's a lake this way?
Sage jerked a thumb over her shoulder. I saw a furlong eagle's nest about a half mile ago. They nest close to water, hence the name.
That's much farther than a furlong.
I didn't name it, she said, staring straight ahead. But anyway, they usually stay within a mile, especially during hatching season.
Alex frowned. How do you know the direction?
She finally turned her face up to look at him. Because I saw the eagle fly over with a fish in its talons. Big fish, too, so it's a decent-sized lake. She smirked. Honestly, Captain, you soldiers should look up as often as you look down. You walked right under me.
That was where she'd been, in a tree, after effortlessly leading him on a chase for over a mile. Part of him wanted to turn her loose and see how many Norsari could track her down, but that was far too risky. You shouldn't be in the woods alone, he said.
Sage snorted, and he grabbed her arm to make her stop.
Have you forgotten how dangerous it is out here?
What are you talking about? Her forehead wrinkled.
She didn't know about the Kazmuni. It wasn't like he could tell her, either.
Alex searched for something that would serve as an excuse.
Remember that boar the ranger squad had? They roam all over this region. Don't tell me you don't know how aggressive they are this time of year.
I haven't seen signs of any.
She looked dubious. That doesn't mean you won't run into signs in 5 minutes, he insisted.
Sage shrugged and turned away. I can take care of myself. But in any case, you're here now. Keep an eye out.
That's not all, he called to her back. You left the camp without telling anyone. No one knew where you were or why you left. You're part of an army unit now. You can't just wander off whenever you feel like it. Do you know how much time I lost looking for you?
Sage stopped and lowered her head. I'm sorry, she said to the ground at her feet. I wasn't thinking. I only wanted to be ready for tonight. I'm not used to keeping you informed. She took a deep breath. I won't do it again.
Her apology was genuine, and he could tell she realized how in the wrong her actions had been. It took everything he had not to pull her into his arms and tell her it was all right. He was just glad she was safe. If he did, though, more than kissing was likely to start. Come on, he said instead. Let's find that lake and then head back. I'm parched.
Chapter 27. The short distance to the lake was silent, as was the walk back to camp. Sage felt guilty at how much of Alex's time she'd wasted, but that he'd come after her fully armed spoke volumes. Something was out there, and it wasn't wild boar. Coupled with Corporal Wilder's information, it wasn't hard to make theories. Alex fully expected to run into Kazmuni in Demora, yet no one else knew anything about it, except maybe Ash Carter, and he was gone. Was Alex supposed to meet with them? That might explain the secrecy and Ambassador Gramwell's involvement, but if so, Alex obviously didn't trust them. Sage made herself two promises. She would double her efforts in her translation project, and she'd continue training in combat while she was here. The second might be tricky. All the recruited soldiers were far beyond her in both strength and skill. She'd probably be stuck with the squires, but it was better than nothing. The lecture on edible and poisonous plants went well, and she didn't even have to ask Alex if she could teach more. He'd already added her to the schedule. When she started Nicholas's lessons, she included the other squires as often as possible, both for their benefit
and to create a little competition to get the prince to put in more than a nominal effort. Sage quickly fell into a routine of teaching and training, becoming a camp authority in the classroom and everyone's adopted little sister in the training grounds. Both roles felt comfortable. She rarely saw Alex, as he led back-to-back training patrols that often lasted 2 or 3 days. At first, she thought the trips had some other purpose, but none of the men she talked to on their return described seeing anything unusual. As promised, the ranger squad stopped by the Norsari camp a couple weeks later, and Sage wasn't surprised to learn Ash Carter had taken charge of them. She sat up late into the night, listening to their descriptions of the land along the southern border, including the Beskan and Yanli gorges the Kaz River flowed through. Both were narrow with sheer walls, but the Yanli was far more dangerous.
"The sides ain't just steep."
Corporal Wilder was deep into his wineskin, gesturing grandly with his hands to emphasize his descriptions.
"They're smooth as glass, except where it's broken and jagged. Nothing grows down there. We call it the Demon's Alley for the black color and the sharp rocks. The stones make good cutting tools, though. We've used it as a quarry, at least what we could reach."
"What could have created something like that?" Sage asked in awe. He shrugged.
"Never heard a theory that made much sense, but it's a deadly place. A few guards rode a boat through it on a dare 2 years ago, but half of them didn't make it. Stupid way to die."
The corporal spat into the fire. Sage looked across the flames to where Alex sat with Ash Carter, watching and listening. There was no jealousy on his face over her speaking with another man, but his eyes had a glint of sadness. Their gazes met, and she issued a mental challenge. "Come over here and talk to me if you want." Alex looked away. A few minutes later, he left the circle of firelight with Ash. "So, Corporal," she said, keeping one eye on Alex, "have you seen any Kazmuni in the last few weeks?" Wilder shook his head.
"Not a one, but Sergeant Carter has us searching."
"Did you cross the river?"
"Not yet. The water's been high and temperamental. We've stuck mostly around the area from last year."
A chill went up her spine. "What happened last year? I thought you said you'd only ever seen Kazmuni on the other side of the Kaz River."
"Around September, we found a place where they crossed and camped and scouted about.
The thing is," he shifted to speak to her in a more confidential manner and lowered his voice,
"I'm not sure I agree. Our Sergeant Starkey was new at the time. I've been out here going on 4 years. No one listened to me, though. They just followed Sarge."
Sage could barely breathe with excitement. "Why do you think he's wrong?" she whispered.
"Well, it seemed a bit large and obvious, like whoever was there wanted the signs to be found. That always makes me suspicious."
Sage nodded in agreement, and he continued.
"Second, they had horses. I've never seen a Kazmuni horse."
"And you'd think if they came to the river for water, they'd bring them," she said.
"Right."
Corporal Wilder was getting more excited.
"And third, they were there in September, much later than I've ever seen Kazmuni appear. They only come in spring and early summer."
According to the documents Sage had studied, there were 2 trade routes between Demora and the Kazmuni capital city of Ostiza, a circuitous path that went around to the fortress at Vinova and south, and a shortcut through the desert following a network of springs. However, the desert route could only be used a few months of the year, as many of the water sources dried up in the summer. She'd wondered why they didn't just follow the Kaz River all the way, but after hearing Wilder describe the Yanli Gorge, she understood. The corporal was right. If the Kazmuni were to come here, they'd only do it when the desert could be crossed. "Anything else?" she asked. Wilder shrugged.
"It looked like they went into the desert, but tracking them was impossible. Wind blows everything away after a day."
So if it wasn't Kazmuni, who do you think it was?
Who else but the Kimisar?
That sounded like a rather far-fetched theory, even for someone who had already shown a hatred for the Kimisar. Here? I've never heard of them going beyond Tazmit. Wilder's already flushed face reddened.
I have a, girl in a village up by the Jovan Road. She told me last year a number of them come through the South Pass last May. They raided a string of farms and disappeared. The army caught a few, but she said there were dozens.
The Jovan Pass had been buttoned up by the army around that time. What if those Kimisar had been trapped on this side of the mountains? Are you thinking that's where they went? Into Kazmin? She asked.
That's my guess.
The corporal took a swig from his wineskin. Sage glanced over at Alex, who was talking quietly to Ash Carter, far out of earshot. Have you told your opinion to Sergeant Carter?
I doubt he'd listen. Sergeants stick together in my experience.
Wilder shook his head.
It probably don't matter anyway. Desert likely swallowed the bastards up.
Sage only nodded, but she couldn't help wondering if all the Kimisar had truly left. Chapter 28 Alex stared at the group around the fire, where Sage was again deep in conversation with one of the rangers. They were mostly discussing the local geography when Alex had left, and in true Sage fashion, she was happiest when she was learning something. Her smile never quite reached her eyes, however, which made Alex realize how little Sage had smiled at all in the past few weeks. The one time she'd looked across the flames at him that night, he could almost hear her daring him to say something. After tracking her down on the first day, he'd worried about her constantly. But she'd obeyed his order and never strayed from the camp, even when he was gone. Whenever the Norsari had returned from a training patrol, Sage peppered them with questions, mostly on flora and fauna they'd seen. Probably she was feeling cooped up, hence her interest in talking with those who'd seen more of the area. He felt a little bad about that, but keeping her here was safer for everyone. Safer for him. Cass, Graham, and Ash still trusted him, though that would change if they ever realized the horrible truth of what Sage's presence meant. Keeping his distance from her was agony at times, especially when he could see she was unhappy. But it was bad enough that his friends knew about their relationship. Though Alex had never entered her tent after that first day, he'd spent several minutes of nights past watching her silhouette as she sat up late, writing. When Alex's first report left for Tenegal, she'd added her own thick packet to the dispatch. A pang had gone through him at the thought that none of it would ever be for him.
Who are you writing to? He'd asked. You realize this mission is a secret, right?
Sage tossed her head, which she still did despite her lack of hair. Some of them are progress reports on the prince for their majesties. The rest are private letters for Claire, who already knows I'm here.
What in the world could you have to discuss in such detail?
She smirked. Are you worried they're about you?
That was exactly what he was afraid of.
Read them if you want, Sage said, waving her hand like it didn't matter. I know you've never fully trusted me. That was a low blow, and Alex's first instinct had been to leave them alone. An hour later, he realized that she'd rather skillfully manipulated him, and he broke the seal and read her letters without any feelings of guilt. After all, a commander was expected to closely monitor all communications, especially during sensitive missions. Her writing was witty and entertaining, but carefully neutral in describing camp workings and routines, which would give no enemy significant information if it was intercepted. Everything was so benign, Alex couldn't believe there wasn't some kind of code within. Through the night, he read them several times over, forward and backward, but try as he might, he could find no pattern, even in the passages about him.
those rather painfully described her loneliness and confusion at his keeping her at arm's length. He remade the seal and gave Sage no sign that he'd read her correspondence. Later, an equally thick package arrived for her from Claire, and though he had every right to read the letters, he passed them on without comment. When Sage brought another bundle to be sent with the weekly dispatch, he managed to resist opening it for 2 hours. He craved her voice and her insight and her humor, even if it was tinged with sadness. Most of all, he needed the reassurance that she still loved him. Another dispatch would go out in 2 days. He was already looking forward to tomorrow night's reading. Outside the circle of firelight, Ash followed his gaze to the gathered soldiers.
"How is Sage doing out here in the rough?"
he asked quietly, though they were out of earshot of anyone.
"Never complains," Alex said. "At least, not that I've heard."
Ash pushed his black hair out of his eyes.
"You say that like you haven't talked to her."
"I haven't."
His friend sighed.
"Alex, I don't want to get in the middle of this."
"Then don't."
Alex tore his eyes away from Sage and focused on the sergeant.
"You're here to report."
Ash shook his head.
"I already told you everything, which was nothing."
A pit formed in Alex's stomach.
"I thought you went to where the Kazmuni had camped."
"I did. It wasn't helpful."
Alex hadn't expected much after 8 months of exposure to the elements.
"But they showed you where they found what they did. What are your thoughts?"
"It's not the place I would have picked to set up camp," said Ash. "Visibility was limited in most directions, and it was a poor place to cross the river, even in August."
The Kaz was currently running high and fast with melting mountain snow. Alex hadn't ventured across it yet, hoping it would calm in the next couple weeks.
"What it did have was a fairly clear path to the Jovan Road."
"Which must have been their goal."
Alex folded his arms and turned away from the fire to resist looking in its direction.
"Maybe,"
Ash shrugged.
"I'm going to head upriver tomorrow and see if I can get us a few boats from one of the villages. Could be handy."
Alex nodded.
"Sounds like a good idea. Quick communication and travel, at least in one direction."
"Exactly."
Neither spoke for another half minute, during which Alex's eyes wandered to the fire again.
"The new moon is in 2 days," he said finally. "The ambassador had aimed to leave by then. It takes about 10 days for our dispatches to reach Tenegal. He'll cross paths with my second and third reports of nothing. It won't look good."
The sergeant leaned against a tree trunk, making him appear even shorter.
"I'm as frustrated as you. We still have at least 3 weeks before he gets here, though."
"Ash?"
His friend looked up.
"What if there's nothing to find?"
Ash shook his head.
"No one comes in like that for no reason. They'll be back."
It felt strange to hope for a foreign invasion to repel, but somehow, Alex felt like his career depended on it. Chapter 29. Sage entered the command tent when bidden, a bundle of letters in hand. Alex looked up from where he sat, writing his report.
"It's getting late,"
he said.
"I was wondering if you were going to make this dispatch."
She shrugged. "It doesn't leave until morning."
"So it doesn't."
Alex went back to his work, but not before she noticed the eager gleam in his eye.
"You can put them in the satchel with the rest."
"Thank you." Sage knelt down and lifted the flap of the leather bag sitting on the ground. There wasn't much in there. She frowned. This could be problematic. She tucked hers in and stood. "Not much this week," she said casually.
Alex gestured to the stack on the corner of his table. "Oh, I'm about to weigh it down some more."
Sage relaxed. He must be adding what Ash had learned while he was away. Alex was also much more cheerful than usual. no doubt because he'd have something to read tonight.
Maybe now was a good time.
Captain, she began, and he glanced up sharply.
Alex, she continued, I heard you're going across the river with a team tomorrow.
Alex narrowed his eyes in suspicion. I am.
And I was wondering if I could go with you, she said quickly.
Alex shook his head. Sage, we already discussed this.
Like hell they'd discussed it. But I can keep up, and I won't be in the way. Please?
You won't be in the way because you won't be there.
But—
I said no.
Alex went back to writing.
You're not to leave the camp. Do not ask again.
Sage hadn't expected him to say yes, but the curt rejection still stung. She left without another word, and went two rows over to watch and wait. It was late, and most in the camp were down for the night. Alex was the only officer still awake. After 10 minutes, the lantern in the command tent moved. Alex came out, the light in one hand, and Sage's packet of letters in the other. She edged behind a wall of canvas, and waited until he was settled in his own tent for several minutes, before creeping back. The key to a convincing deception, as Sage had learned last year, was to be honest whenever possible. Not only did it reduce the number of lies one had to keep track of, the vulnerability that often came with truth generated empathy in those being deceived. Her letters to Claire were genuine in observation and feeling, even when it came to describing her frustration with Alex and being trapped within the camp perimeter. Part of her hoped he would actually listen to her complaints. The best decoys weren't fake all by themselves. Inside the dark command tent, Sage dropped to her knees and felt around for the satchel. Alex had moved the courier's bag when he added his last letters and removed hers, but it wasn't far from where she'd last seen it. Quickly, she stuffed the bag's contents into her tunic, then located Alex's commander's seal and tucked it in her sleeve. After a quick listen for anyone nearby, she slipped back out and walked casually to her own tent. She had to hurry. Not only did she have to read everything in the dozen small packets and reseal them, she had to add what was relevant to her already thick report to the Queen. Then she had to return everything to the command tent and leave the satchel a little fuller. Hopefully Alex wouldn't notice the extra contents when he replaced her letters in the morning. So far, he hadn't. Chapter 30. The Norsari did indeed move south. They traveled so swiftly that Hazar had trouble keeping up, but he also lost time seeking out several Khemisar in the region. His tactic of scattering the soldiers had paid off. All were alive and accounted for, and he was able to assemble a nebulous reconnaissance picture along the way. The most helpful information came from the men who knew the area. Demora had doubled its roaming detachments since he'd left a trail south last summer. That would make what Hazar planned trickier, but ironically, the increased movement of Demoran troops would enable him to better cover the tracks of his own force. When the Norsari began to set up what looked like a permanent camp, Hazar ordered his second-in-command to draw the rest of the men together by the next fading quarter moon. The Demorans would be focused on training for the next few weeks, but the longer Hazar waited, the more the Khemisar risked discovery. Also, the more likely the Norsari would be ready to respond, which meant certain death for his men. Hazar found a hot spring high in the hills west of the Norsari camp and made his observations from there. The area smelled foul due to the sulfur vents in the rocks, but that meant it was less likely to be diligently patrolled, and without the spring, he wouldn't have been able to bear the cold, fireless nights. His biggest challenge was boredom. The days were long when all he could do was wait and watch. As with everything men did, there was a pattern to be exploited. All he needed to do was find it. The more he observed, the more urgently he wanted to act.
Every day the Norsari below grew stronger. Quinn was rather clever to have put his camp where he did. The variety of landscapes made for excellent training. Hazar watched groups of them leave the main camp for days at a time, always going east into the marsh, perhaps as far as the Beskan Gorge, or south across the river, though they hadn't appeared to venture beyond the trees and into Kasman. Once they came toward him in the west, but never too close for comfort. The stench was his ally. He'd have to remember to bathe, or they would smell him coming. Hazar had several options brewing in his mind. The Khimasar were outnumbered, not quite 2-1, and his men hadn't worked together in months. They weren't nearly cohesive enough to take on those kinds of odds, especially against Norsari. Though it was risky, Hazar planned to divide his men and attack in a way that drew most of the Norsari away from the camp. The squires would be left behind with a smaller force, the prince among them. Once they had the boy, Captain Quinn might be willing and able to arrange Hazar's passage himself. His father was the commander on the other side, so he'd certainly know who to talk to over there. The Khimasar could be home by midsummer. Home. Chapter 31. Alex sat in a rowboat, drifting with the current. The day was cool and breezy, but sweat oozed from every pore on his body. He shivered violently with cold and fear, waiting for what he knew was coming. Shouts and crashes echoed off the rocks around him, growing louder as he approached a bend in the river. He gripped his sword in his right hand, while the left steered the boat with an oar. Almost there. But he knew what he would see. He saw it every night. The clash of swords drew his attention to the left bank, where Cassock battled 3 Khimasar, his back to Alex. Though Cass fought well, he was losing ground, and he'd retreated within a few steps of the river. He had nowhere to go. Alex directed the boat to help him. He could get there in time, except... A hoarse cry came from the opposite bank, and Alex turned to see Sage struggling with Duke Demirin. It was no use, though. Her hands were tied, her face bloody and bruised, a knife held to her throat. Charlie's small body lay at her feet, his blood staining the sand. Alex forced his eyes open and jerked to a sitting position on his cot, gasping. He swung his legs down and put his head between his knees and took several deep breaths, trying not to be sick. It was one of the few times he'd managed to wake up before the dream got worse, but he knew from experience he couldn't go back to sleep, or it would pick up where it left off. Sometimes Sage and Charlie were reversed. Sometimes it was Gramwell or Tanner or another of his men fighting on the other side. But the choice was always the same. He always chose the same side, yet it never mattered. Everyone ended up dead. Except him. Chapter 32. The 6th dispatch had left 2 mornings ago, and Sage was beginning work on the 7th. It was hard to believe she'd been here for that long, and had so little to show for it. Each day that passed made her more antsy. Alex was obviously looking for something with all his patrols, but no one else seemed to know what he was finding, if anything. Without a sense of where to start, Sage had very little to investigate or report to Her Majesty. Most of her writing was to Claire, discussing what she'd learned from studying her copy of the trade agreements. A courier from the capital was expected any day now, and Sage was eager to hear what her friend had concluded in her own examination. Also, she felt like she was being watched. Not by the soldiers. They knew she was restricted to the camp, and so kept an eye on her. But that wasn't it. She often caught Alex watching her, at least when he was around. He was always busy, working directly with the Norsari in their combat training and leading almost every overnight mission. She often didn't know when Alex left, but she always knew when he returned, because the first thing he did was look for her. He rarely spoke to her, just seemed to want to assure himself that she hadn't snuck away in his absence. But it wasn't his eyes she felt either. She couldn't explain it. Sage pressed the wax seal across the binding string and set the packet aside. The courier would leave at dawn, so she'd wait until late evening to add it to the dispatch. Though the actual reports would be added separately, she still didn't like giving Alex long to read the safe letters. She'd written a great deal about him this time. Her words were as much to him as to Claire. Spirit above, she missed her friend.
Mistress Sage, came a voice from outside her tent.
It was Prince Nicholas, sounding annoyed at being an errand boy. She went to the opening and stuck her head out.
What is it, Highness?
Captain Quinn requests your presence at the command tent.
The prince turned and sauntered off, before Sage could ask why. Someone really needed to tell him he had to learn how to follow orders before he could start giving them. Sage took a moment to straighten her long tunic. The green one was her favorite, though the dark brown one hid dirt and stains better. On her belt, she always carried her two daggers now. She felt off balance with only one. She stepped outside and made her way to the center of the camp. It was nearing time for the evening meal, and the delicious scent of venison stew met her at every turn. Outside the command tent stood a group of soldiers and horses wearing royal livery. Not just messengers either, from the look of it. Someone important. She quickened her pace and strode inside without asking permission. Her presence had been requested, after all. It took a moment for her eyes to readjust to the shade of the tent, but she recognized Ambassador Gramwell right away. He smiled broadly.
Here's who we've been waiting for.
Sage was confused until he stepped aside to reveal who was with him. Claire. Chapter 33. It took several seconds for Sage to comprehend her friend was truly here, and wearing clothes in a style similar to her own. She'd never seen Claire in anything other than a long dress fit for royalty. Even her nightgowns were embellished and trimmed with lace. For a moment, Sage felt sick, thinking her friend had cut off her own hair. But it hung in a thick braid down her back, interwoven with ribbons that matched her knee-length red tunic and thick hose. Claire jumped forward, looking just as happy as Sage felt to see her. They embraced and began talking over each other with "How have you been's?" and "When did you get here's?" until someone cleared his throat.
"If you ladies would excuse us," Alex said, "we have military matters to discuss."
"Of course, Captain." Claire grabbed Sage's arm and dragged her out of the tent before she could object. "We have some catching up to do."
Once they were outside, Claire asked Sage to take her to the river, and they walked down the slope together. Sage headed for an area near the edge, by the trees, but Claire steered her to a spot in the middle of the bank.
"There," her friend said. "No one can sneak up on us while we talk."
She sat on a wide, flat rock and began unlacing her riding boots.
"My feet are dying for a soak."
Picking a place where they couldn't be overheard, and now exposing her bare legs to over 200 men, Claire was getting more astonishing by the second.
"I never thought to see you in such a short skirt," said Sage, pointing to the gold-embroidered hem lying across Claire's thigh. "Though yours is much fancier than mine."
"Riding in a long skirt every day for 3 weeks is tiresome," said Claire. "And we likely have 2 more weeks to go until Vinova."
Sage inhaled sharply.
"You're going all the way to the outpost?"
"Papa is."
Claire dipped her toes in the frigid mountain water
and sighed a little. I convinced him to take me along.
How did you manage that?
Her friend smiled impishly.
By making myself valuable. Mama sent a letter asking me to make sure Papa remembered the details he usually left to her. So I took care of those and many others until I was indispensable.
Sage shook her head in awe as she removed her own boots and sat.
And you rode all this way?
Well, not quite, Claire admitted. At first, I could only ride for a half day at a time, but I was able to sit in a carriage when I got too sore.
She leaned forward to whisper.
As often as not, I even rode astride rather than side saddle.
Sage toned down her smile for her friend's sake.
Good for you. She put her own feet in the water. So, Vinova, then?
Yes, of course. Claire sat up straighter.
You were right about everything we suspected before you left. The Norsari are here not only to train, but as a deterrent against the Kazmuni coming across the border again, and to fight them if necessary. Papa is here to open talks, assuming the Kazmuni want to talk, once their invasion is discouraged or defeated.
He told you all this?
Sage asked in surprise.
Claire shrugged.
Just that we intend to reach out to Kazmun, but I've been reading his correspondence.
She lifted a dainty white foot out of the water and inspected a blistering spot on her little toe.
I think you've had a bad influence on me.
Claire lowered her foot again.
I haven't seen any of the latest report yet. We passed three couriers on the way, the last one yesterday, and they gave us what was meant for Papa and me. I didn't keep most of what you sent, just forwarded it to Her Majesty. I figured you could tell me everything yourself.
There's very little to report, said Sage with a sigh. The Norsari constantly go out and come back, but no one has ever seen anything suspicious, even in the times they crossed the river.
I think Alex is feeling a lot of pressure to find something. From the looks of it, he doesn't sleep much.
You haven't seen anything?
I haven't left the camp since we arrived.
Claire's mouth dropped open.
I thought you only said that in your letters to throw the captain off. Do you mean to tell me you've learned nothing on your own? Why did you bother coming?
Keep your voice down, Sage said. It's not that simple. I'd probably sneak out of camp if I had any idea where to go.
Besides, she glanced around, I don't think it was the Kazmuni. You said that in your third report, but I'm not sure I understood why.
You're still working on all the trade agreements, right?
Claire nodded.
Remember the one that talks about caravans crossing the desert?
Claire pursed her lips as she searched her memory.
They could only travel in the spring. Otherwise, caravans were to go through Vinova.
Exactly, Sage said. All the springs dry up. The disturbance that has everyone worked up was in late summer.
Yes, but there's a difference between a trade caravan and an army, Sage.
Sage sat back a little, her confidence fading.
True. But no one has ever seen Kazmuni after the summer solstice.
But they have seen them. They've been coming to the Kaz River for years now.
Sage frowned. Just the past two.
And if it's May now, they're due, aren't they?
Yes, Sage nodded. They are.
Chapter 34. Once Claire and Sage were gone, Alex invited Ambassador Gramwell to sit while he moved to a chair on the opposite side of the table.
I was expecting you, sir, but Lady Claire was a surprise, he said. Ambassadors are always married men for good reason.
Lord Gramwell poured himself a cup of water from a pitcher.
Women open doors that would otherwise be shut in our faces. I was already feeling the loss of Lady Gramwell, who was too ill to travel all the way to Vinova, and Claire took care of matters I wouldn't have even thought of. In the end, it made sense to bring her.
The ambassador raised his cup before taking a drink.
Never underestimate the value of having a smart woman by your side, Captain.
I won't, sir. Alex had no doubt that was Sage's influence at work, but she'd looked so happy to see Claire. Maybe he could convince her to travel on to Vinova with her friend.
I met your latest dispatch the other day, Captain.
Lord Gramwell set the chalice down and looked at Alex sternly.
It was rather distressing to see you've learned nothing after 6 weeks.
Alex tried not to fidget under the ambassador's gaze. It was nearly as powerful as his own father's.
Sir, I've almost come to the conclusion that there's nothing to find. Perhaps we were mistaken in our assessment. Are you willing to stake your career on that?
Not yet, said Alex, trying to sound calm and confident.
I need a couple more weeks of scouting to be certain. You have one.
One? Alex fought back panic.
You mean with my next dispatch?
Lord Gramwell shook his head.
No, Captain. I mean when Colonel Traisden arrives. The courier from Tenegal that caught up to us this morning carried this for you.
He reached into his traveling jacket and pulled out a sealed note.
I have my own, but I imagine it says the same thing.
Alex cracked the seal as a cold sweat broke out over him.
Captain Quinn, in light of your findings or lack thereof, I have turned my full attention to your mission. If your fourth report, which by now has already been sent, does not contain any new information, I will leave for your position within a day, and you may expect my arrival a fortnight after that. If I deem it necessary, I will take command of the Norsari Battalion at that time. Respectfully, Colonel K. Traisden.
Alex dropped the note and pulled a calendar toward him. If dispatches took 10 days to reach Tenegal, the fourth one would have arrived 7 days ago. One day to prepare and tie up necessary matters, and the colonel would be 5 days into the journey south by now. No doubt he'd met the fifth report already, and he'd have the sixth in a few more days. Alex had 8 or 9 days before the colonel arrived, 10 if he was lucky. Ambassador Gramwell watched him calmly.
I feel the need to remind you that Colonel Traisden handles all intelligence reports from the realm, and the issue here, though significant, is only one of his many national concerns. Your lack of progress has monopolized his attention at a dangerous time.
Alex felt like he would be sick.
I'm on your side, Captain, said the ambassador. I hope to the spirit this is all a mistake and a conflict is not imminent.
He stood and looked down at Alex.
But whatever your assessment of the situation, I suggest you be ready to defend it when Colonel Traisden arrives.
Chapter 35. Claire and the ambassador left early the next morning. It would take them the whole day to get back to the Jovan Road, where their caravan waited. Sage was saddling her friend's horse when Lord Gramwell approached.
You're still welcome to come along, Mistress Sage. I know Claire would love to have you with us.
Last night Sage had dined in the command tent with the officers and their guests. Ambassador Gramwell had invited her to travel with them to Vinova as Claire's companion. She'd politely declined the offer, with a side glance at Alex, who she suspected was the source of the idea. Claire slept on a cot in Sage's tent, and in their late-night talking, she admitted Lieutenant Gramwell had asked her to persuade Sage to go.
"I'm afraid I have too much work to do with His Highness," she told the ambassador. "Her Majesty is depending on me to bring him up to the level he should be at."
Prince Nicholas stood behind Lord Gramwell, holding his horse's lead. He stuck his tongue out at Sage, but she kept a straight face.
"Very well," said the ambassador. "Where is my daughter now?"
I believe she's taking care of some last-minute feminine issues, Ambassador, Sage answered, knowing very well Claire was in her tent, saying goodbye to Luke in private.
Say no more, Mistress